Johnny touched the button to sound off. He felt an impatience taking hold of him. These diplomats coming in one by one. It was too slow. The coordinator had come in with Mr. Sung, who was holding a lot of things in his arms. It was obvious that Johnny was under strain. Mr. Sung said something in his sing-song voice. The coordinator said,
Mr. Sung reminds you that even a lost battle can be redeemed at a conference table. To be patient and use skill.
Mr. Sung had other things now. He took the haircut cloth off Johnny and showed him a tunic. It was a very plain garment at first glance. It was cut from shimmering black silk. It had a stand-up collar. It was supposed to be a tight form fit. But it was the silver-colored buttons that attracted Johnny's attention. He knew what they were. He had once remarked to Kerr that it was surprising to see such pretty metal on a cyclo emergency switch. It looked like silver at first glance, but the least amount of light striking it made it glow in rainbow colors. Kerr had said no, it wasn't used for emergency switches because it was pretty. It was used because it was hard. It was a one-molecule-thick metal spray of an iridium alloy, and no matter how many claw points hit it, it wouldn't wear off. And when you were in a dark mine with little light, the emergency button was visible because it looked like it flashed in colors. He knew what the son-in-law had been doing, plating buttons, enough to blind you. Mr. Tsung had him put it and the black silk pants on and buttoned the tunic all up, iridium buttons every couple of inches down the front. Then Mr. Tsung made him put on a pair of boots. They were chinko boots, but they had plated them with iridium alloy. A belt was fastened around him, a wide one, and it was also plated. All except the buckle. And that was his old gold-colored U.S. Air Force buckle. Shined until it gleamed. He remembered thinking once, in the cage, he might be the last surviving member of a long-gone force. A strange thing to think, but right now, it sort of cheered him up. He had thought he was getting dressed and was a bit dismayed to find that Mr. Tsung did not like a pucker on the shoulder and a certain gather in the tunic back and took it all off him and sent them back. Mr. Tsung had something else now. It was his twisted knob carry with the carved figures, but they had plated it with iridium. It flashed like a length of flame. He knew he couldn't use it that way, but he was glad not to be going into that conference totally without a weapon. Then the son-in-law came in. He was carrying a helmet. Basically, it was just a Russian helmet they had smoothed down. But what had they done to it? The chin strap was plated with iridium alloy. So was the whole helmet. But what was this? The son-in-law turned it a bit proudly so Johnny could see what was on the front. How had they done this? Then he saw that the son-in-law was holding the paper patterns he had laid down on the helmet front and sides, one after the other, and sprayed through the open holes with different metal sprays. It was a dragon. And what a dragon! Gold wings on the side of the helmet, clawed paws that seemed to grip the lower helmet edge, scales and spikes from the spine edged in blue, a ferocious face with what appeared to be real rubies for flaming eyes, white fangs in a scarlet mouth. Ferocious. And a round, whitish ball in its scarlet, otherwise gaping, mouth. It looked three-dimensional. It was similar to the dragon at the console and the clay dragons lying on the building pile, except for this big white ball in its mouth.